I'm Joe Reed, and I'm with Robin Witten, and we're both welcoming you to Audiobook Break. Audiobook Break is actually the brainchild of Robin Witten, so I'm going to throw this ball to her, and she can tell you what she was thinking when she invented this podcast.
Well, it's great, Joe, to be starting the second season of Audiobook Break, because with the idea that we would be podcasting classic audiobooks, chapter by chapter, we started with David Copperfield many months ago. And now here we are with the second season, and we will be podcasting The Iliad, Homer's classic work. And I think in the same way that Copperfield was sort of ready-made to be a podcast, of course, here we are with Homer's Iliad, and it too is just the perfect thing to be podcasting in a chapter by chapter form.
Well, exactly, because the book, it's an epic, it's a poem, and it was composed as a piece of oral history slash literature slash mythology by Homer. I love the Iliad. I love this story. And in ways, I can't even quite describe how much I love this story and probably needs to be examined. But there is just something that's so captivating to me about it. It's set during the Trojan War. And just as a small reminder, the Trojan War began because Paris from Troy kidnapped slashed eloped with Helen, who was the wife of a Greek prince, and brought her back to Troy, and it precipitated a 10-year war.
Yes.
Now, this is just a story of 50 critical days towards the end of the war, when Achilles, who's Greek slash Achaean, you'll hear that a lot, quarreled with Agamemnon, who's the king of the Achaeans slash Greeks, and he's sulking in his tent. While the Iliad alludes to what happens before and gives a sense of what's going on later, this is really what the Iliad is about, though you do get a sense of the entire story of the Siege of Troy, which was monumental.
Yes, and I think that the most interesting thing is that it was told in the oral form, as you said, but it was told in chapters, as you wouldn't listen to the whole thing in one sitting, and nor I think the way it was intended. It was intended in a serialized form. So having the podcast is the perfect way of absorbing and really enjoying the Iliad in a way that is sort of original.
I think that's right, because I've listened to this a couple of times, like three times, and I really like listening to it in a serialized form, which I do on my own. You know, I serialize my own little audiobook of it because it gives me a moment to pause, think, reflect before I move on to the next part. And I think that's right. Important. And I think, you know, this was written at a time when time was very different than time is now.
Yes. And I think it's good to take a little break. If you listen to too much, I do think that some of the interrelationships and all of the feuds and the various names and things kind of, they can get jumbled in your head. I mean, they may get
exactly
jumbled in your head in a short sitting, but you know, it's, I think that the short book by book, because actually Homer composed this in 24 books, which we are doing in 24 podcasts. That was a good sort of slice to absorb at one sitting.
Yeah, I think that's right. I completely agree.
And Joe, we have to say that which version of the Iliad we're going to be podcasting here, because there have been multiple translations and multiple audio performances, but we have Ian Johnston's translation, and it is read by the amazing Anton Lesser.
Yes, I've listened to and I've read Ian Johnston's translation, and it's very accessible. It's really good, and it just opens the story up, I think, in a great way. And then when you have Anton Lesser reading it, he is a great, great audiobook narrator. I mean, like many, many Brits, he got his start on BBC radio and in theater, and he's recorded many audiobooks, many classics. He won an award for his recording of Charles Dickens' Great Expectations. But he also, I mean, he records things from Paradise Lost to contemporary novels like, you know, Philip Pullman.
I know. But now we have him in TV series all the time.
We do indeed. You may know him from The Crown, or he was Thomas More in Wolf Hall, or Game of Thrones fans. He was that evil genius Qui-Born in Game of Thrones who sort of brought the mountain back to life.
Yes. And I love him in the Endeavor series about the young Inspector Morse. We love Anton Lesser. This is a great performance. There's a tremendous amount of drama in the story. They're fighting all the time, whether they're fighting, physically fighting, which of course happens all the time, or they are scheming and plotting as the gods do among themselves of who's going to be the fairest, who's going to get back at someone else. And there's a lot of drama.
There is. There definitely is. And Anton Lesser just knows how to do it. And it's also written in such a way that there's a really natural cadence that allows for expressions of rage and of empathy and of remorse and of love. And it just, Homer's verse really encompasses that. And Anton Lesser just knows how to express it. And we need to say it's published by Nexus Audiobooks, who they know how to do classic audiobooks.
They certainly do. And this is a great example. And, you know, I think we should probably play a little clip right here.
Okay. Before we play the clip, can I just bring up some things, a thing to notice? Because I think the clip we're going to play fits in very nicely.
Absolutely.
Okay. I wanted to begin with the interference of the gods. They are very important, and they interact with human beings a lot. And they were lined up on both sides of this war. And in fact, their actions precipitated. The story has it, there was a great banquet in celebration of a marriage, and all the gods were invited, all but one. Ares, the goddess of discord, was not invited because, hello, she's the goddess of discord. And she was not happy. And she arrives at the celebration with a golden apple, which she threw in the table in front of Zeus, and it said, for the fairest one. Immediately, three hands come out of Hera, Athena, and Aphrodite, and they each want Zeus to place the apple in their hands. Zeus, not being a complete fool, says, I'm not doing this. And Paris, a Trojan mortal, would make that decision, foolish boy that he is. Hera had promised him power. Athena had promised him wisdom, but Aphrodite offered him love, the most beautiful woman in the world, Helen. The fact that she was married to a Greek prince, leave that to one side, you get Helen. Paris chose Helen, and therefore he chose Aphrodite. And in the years to come, he kidnapped Helen, as I mentioned, and Troy, suddenly, who was under the protection of some gods, became the mortal enemies of these other gods. And these gods interfered consistently throughout this war. Consistently, consistently, consistently. And at very pivotal moments. And now I think it's good to hear the clip.
Okay.
Because Zeus has had enough.
This is a great clip to go right here with the gods interfering.
As dawn first spread her yellow robe across the earth, thunder-loving Zeus summoned an assembly of the gods on the highest crest of many-ridged Olympus. Zeus himself addressed them. The other deities, those ranked below him, listened carefully. "Hear me, all you gods and goddesses. I'll speak what the spirit in my chest prompts, and let no female god, no male one either, seek to thwart my plan. Let's get agreement from all of you to end this matter quickly. If I see any of you breaking ranks of gods keen to assist the Trojans or Danaans, that god I'll beat up ignominiously and send back to Olympus. Or I'll seize him and pitch him into black Tartarus, way down into the deepest pit below the earth where the gates are iron, the threshold bronze as far below Hades as heaven lies above the earth. Then he'll acknowledge just how strong I am, the strongest of all gods. Come on, try it. Then everyone will know. Take a golden cord, hang it from heaven. Let gods and goddesses all together grab hold of one end of it and pull. You'd not drag Zeus, most high counselor, down from heaven to the ground, never. No matter how hard you tried to do it. But when I wished to pull in earnest, I'd yank up the earth itself, the sea as well. I'd loop that cord round some Olympian peak and hang it in mid-air, the whole of it. That's how much stronger I am than gods and men.
Okay, two things. One, the gods did quake, and they ended up ignoring Zeus. But two, note Anton Lesser.
Yes, he really.
Is fabulous. He is just brilliant in this.
Well, he has complete control, and yet he has all the emotional content. I mean, you know, there's so much drama that he doesn't need to have a big
exactly.
performance. He knows the level of restraint, and yet all the emphasis is so beautifully placed. I mean, he's a marvel.
You know, I mean, there's something about actors who trust the words.
Yes, that's a good way of describing it.
And I think he really, really does. I mean, Homer doesn't need an over-the-top performance
right.
with this.
And, you know, it's what's interesting is right now there is such a big interest in so many contemporary titles written contemporarily have been inspired by the mythology of the Greek mythology, but particularly the Trojan War. We have some of the titles that have gotten the most attention over the last couple years, The Silence of the Girls, that Pat Barker's title, which is now, I think, right this week, her second in that trilogy, The Women of Troy, is coming out. She is an amazing historical fiction writer. I enjoyed that as an audiobook. It's a great companion to this. But, you know, that's not the only one.
No, it's not. Because I was going to say another thing to note is women, and they are slighted in the Iliad, and there's no question about that. They're mostly shadows. The book begins with Chryseis, who's a woman claimed by Agamemnon as a spoil of war, and the quarrel between Agamemnon and Achilles is over Briseis, a woman Achilles claimed as a prize, and now what Agamemnon wants. Women were prizes. If their side lost the war, they would be carted away as trophies or sold as slaves. And I think what Pat Barker does and what other women do and what the Iliad, I think, inspires people to do is what happens when we imagine this from a woman's perspective? What would this look like? What would this feel like?
Right. And it's so many, I mean, really several spectacular novels have come out of this.
Yeah.
Pat Barker and the Daughters of Sparta, which is Claire Heywood's book. And a title that I remember as an audiobook from really years ago, which was Adele Garas's book that is just called Troy for Young Adults and read by the amazing Miriam Margolyes.
Oh.
And I've just never forgotten that recording. So, I mean, there are lots of other things to be listening to along with the Iliad. including, of course, the Song of Achilles, which we've talked about here, and Troy, Stephen Fry's book that we just talked about, and to me has unraveled a lot of what's going on in the Iliad. That was his intent.
I worship Stephen Fry's book. I mean, that is a great, great audiobook, as I stated when we discussed it.
But I think it's a great way to, you know, either be a side-by-side companion or to prep a little bit of, like, first of all, he forgives you immediately for not getting all the names and the relationships straight, which I needed. I really needed that.
You know, but the Iliad itself, and I really, really do want to emphasize this, is a stark picture of the vulnerability of women. We're never sure if she chose Paris, was put under a spell by Aphrodite, or was kidnapped. We just don't know. But her portrait, I think, is both haunted and haunting. But that vulnerability of women, it actually is more terrifying because it's so matter of fact. He does not spend a thought, a moment, a glance in how Briseis might be feeling. Nothing. You know, Agamemnon wants her, Achilles has her. What she wants does not matter. I think that's really important to know going in.
Yes, and I think that's why certainly the contemporary novels have been like, wait a second, there's another side to this story. But first you have
there's
to have
the... There's a lacuna here, as they say. Let us fill that in.
But you have to have the original story to begin with.
Exactly. And I think the other thing the Iliad is, and I think this is also important, it really is a story of warfare. It is very, very gory in places, very detailed in physical injuries. So I think people should be aware of that. And it also meticulously details the participants and their lineages. And Homer both extols and honors that kind of, you know, warrior courage, but man, he does not shy away from the absolute tragedy of war, the pain, the loss, the devastation, and the ridiculousness of male pride, which just seems insane to me. And I think it's hard to come away from listening to this and think war is a good idea, however much men might want their share of glory.
Right. And, you know, I think that's why when you have a chance to listen to such a beautifully done recording, you get that sense and you understand why this has endured for centuries.
Yeah. But, you know, I also just want to quickly point out that Homer composed this 400 years after Troy fell. That's a really long time. And he begins the Iliad with this invocation to the muses, asking to them to be sure he gets things right. And it's really good because so much time has elapsed. And I think, you know, when you hear that famous catalog of the ships and the descriptions of battles, the Iliad is so aware of its role as keeper of memory. And I think credibility is really central to its storytelling, as much as it involves gods and goddesses. I mean, I love to think of a time where gods and goddesses might have walked the earth.
Well, it is an amazing experience.
Helen might have been the face that launched 1,000 ships, but the Iliad is an epic that has inspired thousands and thousands of works of art, from paintings to theater to literature to dance, for well over 2,000 years.
Right. And all other novels as well, and other things to read. That's why it's a great thing for our second season of Audiobook Break.
I completely agree. I was so pleased when Robin said this is what we were doing, and it was Anton Lesser. She can tell you I practically fainted away. I was so happy.
Well, we'll start with the book one tomorrow.
We will. And I'm looking forward to it. And just let it take you. I guess that's the only way I can say how to experience it is just close your eyes and go with it. It's extraordinary.
Yes, the essence of storytelling.
Completely. And I really, one more shout out, please, to Naxos Audiobooks, because The Iliad is only one of many remarkable books available through our partner. And I'm so thrilled Naxos Audiobooks is our partner. And for a full list of their audiobooks, you can go to naxosaudiobooks.com. Okay, are you ready?
We're ready. Sound the trumpets.
Sound that trumpet. I'm Joe Reed, and Robin Witten was with me, and tomorrow we launch The Iliad.